It's not often I do a episode of the Sideshow from Ireland. I know my accent is obviously from the smaller island, as I like to call it. But I'm in true Peter style. I'm in Tipperary. I'm on my, shall I call it a holidays? Am I actually allowed to call it that when it's what you do for a living? It's lashing out of the heavens. It's very stereotypically true Irish weather. All four seasons in one day. No question about it. You can hear the rain maybe. Can just pick it up? Coming down off the leaves, and it'll go between heavy and soft. So if I interrupt this recording, I'm really sorry, but it may go that, but just the weather may get a bit too bad. Let's play the intro jingle and I'll come back to you just after this. It's certainly starting to come down now.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
I'm sitting down on a tree stump. More salubrious surroundings maybe can only be met by the time I interviewed James Basson, and we were sitting in the front of my Jeep. He referred to it as the filthiest place he's ever been, but that's because it was laden with compost and filled with plants. On this occasion, however, contrast is an old friend of the Sideshow. You are the most recorded person who lives on the island, and we've spoken on a number of occasions, so if you want to, you can pause this one, go back and listen to all of the things that we spoke about, and that'll save this introduction. But he'd be best known for the apple farm, or as the apple farmer in Tipperary. I'm sorry, I've got a sort of a thing happening in my mouth because we've been eating plums before we did this. Probably the worst thing we could have done. It's like getting a peanut stuck in the back of your mouth partway through going live on television. Con, how are you? Good to see you again.
I am really great. Thanks very much, Peter.
The last time we were speaking, if I remember it correctly, and I haven't done the research on this in true Peter style, I'll just make sure I'm recording because I'm into the tail end of my phone as it stands. I am. But we were talking about a large area. We were actually sitting in the middle of a large area of wildflowers that you have in one of the fields up near the road. Mm-hmm. And when we were talking over the last few days that I've been here, we were commenting on a change that has happened in my domestic garden, my own personal garden, and something similar to, and that is allowing weeds appear in places where they maybe would never have appeared before. So underneath the trees, I know in my own back garden, I have a hedge of fruit trees, of bramley and eaten apples and plums and pears and whatever the case may be. And I think there's a fig tree mixed in there. That controls their weeds, but the weeds grow up underneath it. And then I think heading towards the back of the garden where you can drive over the surface, similar to where we are now, I sowed and scattered grass seed into it eons ago, and so it appears like an old wild boreen, to borrow an Irish term. Mm-hmm. It's one thing for me to do it on a domestic level, but you're doing it on a commercial farming level, where when me and you went through college, let's say 20, 30 years ago, pick a number between 1 and 10, you say, that certainly would not have been allowed.
Yeah, I suppose where we are right now is beside the plums. And that's one of the easier places for me to let run a little bit wild, because the plum trees are naturally quite large, and it would take quite a large weed to compete with them, if you know what I mean. So we're kind of doing the same thing all around the farm a bit, even where the apple trees are. And as you say, you know, many years ago in college, it was all about having everything as neat and tidy and as little competition for the plants that you were growing as crops as possible. And that meant, of course, that you were going to probably have to spray with herbicides to kill the weeds or weed killers and that kind of thing. I remember going occasionally to farms at that time where the weed control wouldn't have been so great. And, you know, you would have had some kind of more relaxed, maybe older farmers from a long time ago, probably 100 years ago now at this stage. and looking at the kind of the management and thinking, oh God, they're not doing a great job there, are they? You know, and it's funny how the perspective has changed, because as you said, the last time we were sitting in a deliberately planted wildflower area, which is great and which is still there, and now I'm just trying to let it go a little bit to relax my my thinking on, you know, what should be growing where and what shouldn't be growing in a particular location. So some weeds under the trees is now becoming acceptable to me in my head, although still a little bit awkward for me to walk through it and come to terms with it, but I'm getting there.
Well, there's a logic behind fruit growing in there's a logic behind the presentation of, for me, a fruit farm, or any farm for that matter. And it's a bit, I don't know what the cliche is, but a tidy house is a tidy kitchen, or a tidy kitchen is a tidy child, or there's some 1930s Irish cliche that my mum would have had, which was basically, if you've got a filthy kitchen, your kids are running around like potato sacks, or whatever you want to call it. In conversation that I had of recent with Neil from one of the garden centres on the Big Island, we spoke about good husbandry. And good husbandry was the point at which, in a nutshell, if you've got a filthy farm or a dirty farm or an untidy farm, chances are your trees are going to be slightly diseased. Your return on per tree, per acre, per whatever it might be is... I know I'm paraphrasing it and I'm getting it all a little bit muddled, but am I far off the mark if I was to bring your head to what you were originally educated in?
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. So, you know, I suppose once it became a thing that you shouldn't have weeds, you know, competing with your trees, for example, you know, the solution to that was to make sure you had no weeds. But of course, you can have weeds which are also not really competing with your trees. If you think about a natural woodland, a deciduous woodland like my fruit trees are, of course, in the springtime, you know, when there's no leaves on the oak trees or whatever it is, you'll have bluebells and all sorts of other vegetation under those plants. And then once the canopy develops enough, you know, it's too dark for anything really to grow underneath and so on. And I suppose we didn't spend long enough maybe considering, you know, why those plants are going to grow on the ground underneath the trees at the times they will and so on. You know, what's there for them that you know, that's encouraging them to grow? Are, you know, there's obviously moisture, there's nutrients, and you know, there's enough light, and yet later in the year, you know, they don't really compete because there isn't enough light and so on there. So I think it's a kind of a relearning, if you know what I mean. And the weeds that I have here aren't kind of, you know, woodland flowers, if you know what I mean, although there will be a few, especially in the springtime. You do get a you know, some slightly different mixture of plants under the trees. But it's like you say, it's about managing and trying to make that management judgment to, you know, and make it at a point, you know, where you're not affecting nature in too much of an adverse way. And of course, there are also the beneficial sides of having those weeds, because they provide habitat for, you know, beneficial insects and things like that, which are hopefully helping to control other things that are on my trees and so on as well. So it's just a changing mindset.
Yeah. How bad did we have it? Referring to the 80s, and I'm probably heading into a discussion that my memory is now telling me we had before, where we referenced DDT, that for children of the 80s was to do with wrestling, WWF wrestling, as a, by the way, and it was also I know I've gone off on a tangent, we're about giggling now, but it was also a chemical which was used for killing absolutely every disease known to mankind, but also killing weeds, so you can figure that one out between yourselves. Is there a point, and I ask this very eloquently, where we've now gone to the opposite, and it's a conversation that we had, where I know farmers who have sprayed weeds to make the place look presentable. Mm-hmm. They haven't sprayed the whole lot. They've got, let's say, 40 acres.
Yep.
They've got front of houses kept presentable. You mow a 2-metre strip around it, that lawn is allowed to go wild. You paddock it off or fence it off, and they were doing a little bit of tidying and trimming and make it look like they cared, in a nutshell. But what he was actually spraying with was vinegar.
Yep.
Which, you know, if you want to drink vinegar, fair play to you, it's not my cup of tea, but at the same token, and because the grass or the annual weeds went yellow. There was a little bit of mayhem. Somebody took a photograph. It goes out online and all of a sudden somebody's getting smacked with a big stick and you're trying to explain, well, did you ask him what he sprayed with? And the answer is no. And by the time you've actually screamed wolf, it's a little bit too late. And in conversation with friends of mine who are educated in horticulture, but also have a little bit of a logic, the way we were sort of saying it is, I shouldn't eat cake for breakfast, lunch and dinner and drink Guinness, but now and again it's okay. But I understand the outcry and I understand the reason for the outcry. Mm-hmm. Have we gone the opposite of the 80s is probably the original question, to go back to that again.
Yeah, well, it's a difficult one from the point of view of, in a commercial context, I suppose, which is, you know, what you were talking about, the place that you were visiting or whatever, because if you do have to manage your weeds or whatever, and if you have no access to anything chemical to do that, it can become very expensive to manage that, either mechanically or, you know, by hand or what have you. So I'd hate to take all options off the table in terms of what you might be able to use to manage, you know, the landscape or the farm or what have you. I just think we need to think a little bit more carefully about what we're using and in what circumstance and why we need to use it. And is it just to make something, you know, look the way we think it ought to look, or is it maybe, you know, are we just not maybe thinking deeply enough about how things could look? It's very difficult.
Well, I'll give you a funny one. I'm driving down through Clonmel, which is it's a town not too far away from where you are based, actually. And there's an area it's got the sign in it saying wildflowers growing here, or this one's for the bees, or whatever the signs invariably say. And when I looked at it closely, I've seen the wildflower displays that some councils have done, and they've got all variants of mixtures that look like a Timotei advert meets Mary Poppins, and you know yourself listening at home what they look like. They're invariably very, very pretty, eloquent pictures that you could consider quite like what you had planted up the way, actually.
Exactly, yeah.
And this one was, for want of a better description, if somebody had got us a load of 804, a size of stone, for hardening off, allowing machinery to drive on, but cheap as chips, and left it in a corner, the weeds that would grow on that would invariably be thistle, nettles,
yeah,
or some sort of
tolerate dry soil and all of that. Yeah.
And that's what it looked like.
Yeah.
In context, with my horticultural head on, the soil was rubbish or pants or heading towards nothing but rock. Two, the weeds weren't in any way attractive, but three, you stick the sign in and it means we don't have to do any sort of maintenance on it. And half my head is going, well, it's possibly taken that a little bit too far. At the same token, I can hear the odd person saying, come on, Peter, take it a little bit easy. It's only a strip of plant and it's Clonmel. And I'm playing devil's advocate here, but there is a point between where you have to keep things tidy. There is a point where you've got to turn around as a commercial grower and say, well, okay, I'm understanding of what's happening in the great big sphere in which we live. I'm going to put in a little bit to them because I'm going to put that area to a polythene tunnel. I'm going to let that bit go wild, as I have done my own garden, because I'm about to cover that in with, be it a shed roof or whatever the case may be. And so there's a yin-yang balance in there. But there is also a point where I'll go back and say it again, at the height of the grow your own epidemic or pandemic, McDonald's were giving away grow your own kits with Happy Meals.
Yeah.
And then it goes full circle.
Yeah.
And that's for the guy who grew plants under his bed, happy head on my shoulders. That's the bit where my fear would be, that in all of this, it goes a stage, it goes a bit too far and it starts. And again, if you look at where grow your own is now, I don't know as many kids who are doing what they're maybe doing then.
Yeah, no, that's true. I suppose for the likes of the councils and that, you know, I think they're going to have to learn how to manage their wild areas and so on as well. You can just leave it go wild, but all you'll end up with is eventually is scrub and shrubs and so on. It's still going to require management, and probably more management than it ever did when it was just being mowed as a nice grass verge. So, you know, there's learning everywhere, really. I from my point of view, I also need to learn a bit more, I suppose, but yeah, it's not a thing that I can just let that go and let the really strong weeds and thistles and stuff take over after a few years, because that's what they'll do. And again, I'll eventually have briars growing up through my plum trees if I don't eventually do something. So at some point, you do need to make some interventions.
Well, let's get into that while because I don't know how this one is going to roll. As in true Peter style, we don't really have a plan at all. But I can tell you for absolute nothing, in my own garden, which was about an acre, I'm being eaten by the midgets. They're flying around the place. It's been a bit damp and a bit sunny and a bit all over the place and a bit chop-changey. But I can tell you in my own garden, it was much easier to jump on the ride on a lawnmower, stick on one of the gardening podcasts, or one of the Arsenal ones, whichever the case may be, and drive around for 45 minutes and have a little bit of peace and quiet. And now, because I'm leaving areas go long and wild and plant a few more trees in, it's it's not easy doing an acre with a strimmer by hand and your hand's still vibrating 45 minutes later. Yeah. It's not easy.
Yeah. No. And there are other things as well, I suppose, in a commercial context like this, and we would come across it, you know, because we're in a Borbia scheme and so on. You know, and if there is too much wild cover, you know, it'll encourage mice and rodents and stuff like that. And, you know, then are you going to have to put out poison for them or whatever? And if you do, are you going to accidentally poison something that's predating on those and so on? So, you know, and of course you can't have rodents running around, you know, where you're growing food close to the buildings and stuff anyway. So it's a really tricky one from that point of view as well. And, you know, in the same scheme that I'm in, you know, there's kind of sections in it which are talking about, you know, doing things to manage and mind wildlife and so on. And at the same time, they, you know, there are other elements which are almost contradictory, you could say, that are telling you, you know, that you must keep everything really clean and tidy so that you won't have rodents and so on going around. And of course, if you don't leave some old bits of timber around, you won't have any nesting sites for you know, the type of bees that burrow into old blocks of wood and that kind of thing.
Bee hotels.
Yeah. But even the old bits of wood we're sitting on and the other lumps of it that are around here, you know what I mean? You know, there will be things making holes in those and nesting in them, especially if they're just thrown into an old hedge or whatever. But of course, there could be mice living under them as well, you know, so that's all a thing, yeah.
For those who are unaware and haven't gone back and listened to those old episodes, Con produces, I didn't want to make this a salesy one because you know him already, or if you're an old school listener to the Sod Show, you will do. In a nutshell, you do Con's apple cider, Con's apple cider vinegar, Con's, my favourite, Con's lemony lemonade. Did I get it right?
Yeah.
I was in Dunstores and Super Value in Care, and I think Dunstores in Clonmel, and I think I took a photograph and stuck it out of your stuff in with Whelan's.
That's right, James Whelan's
Butchers. Yeah, James Whelan's Butchers, and you were in there as well. To me, it's a high level product, which you might say, well, it's niche. Niche as in you're not supplying it in 40,000 countries. It's not Budweiser, mm-hmm. to put it in context, or certainly not Diageo or Guinness or one of them. But it's a niche product that is high-end as far as I'd be concerned. There is a point at which all of the things that you do sort of make sense to me. There's a reason why I come here to go on holiday in Vertacomas, get to walk around in the middle of the day without telling you, even though I'm not supposed to, and see all of the trees and see how you're doing it and compare my Victoria plums with your Victoria plums and see, you know, how one is going on with the other or what it's about to become if I let it do that or that. But if I'm a buyer from a supermarket, let's be spade to spade about this. If I walked out and saw the place looking like a pile of...
Bit rough
is a good way. Thanks, Con, you saved me there. I would question.
Yeah, what else
that.
Has been done? It looks like taking a shortcut, so what else has been done that way? Yeah, I get you.
Is that how it's seen? Is that how it's done? I understand you're talking about... Sorry, the microphone's over here. I understand you're talking about how you're changing your ideology or your way of thinking, or thinking that we came through college, both of us, or were reared, which you might say, in horticulture, and how that's evolved and that's changed and how times have changed and county councils have changed and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But there is also a point where presentation, there's a lot to be said for it. When you go for a job interview, you brush your hair to the side and you put on a shirt and tie and you have a shave and you do all of those things. And equally in business, for growing, albeit it's outside and it's great outdoors, you have to present yourself relatively well.
Mm-hmm. No, that's fair comment. And if to be fair, if it was easier to let the weeds grow, it would be a much easier decision to make. But it's not actually easier, you know, to let them grow and then to manage around them, if you know what I mean. It's probably the old ways that we were doing them, as in the kind of very clean and very neat and very tidy and very precise, were probably actually easier, because you just, you know, you just did something to a schedule and you tended to do the same thing the next year and the next year. Whereas when you leave things go, you end up having to make a different decision the following year and a different decision the following year, because you're coping in a way with, you know, choices that you've made before that might have slightly unforeseen consequences or whatever. So I'm happy to try and explain away what I'm doing while still hopefully, you know, keeping the people who are going to be doing my food safety audits and so on happy with what I'm doing. But if they, you know, ultimately if they say no, you can't go that far, you've gone too far, then I've got to step back and you know, and go slightly back to what I was doing before. That is a fact.
Business is business.
I suppose so, yeah. There's also, I've had some conversations with some other farmers around this in the last while, because let's say around here there'd be a lot of conventional farmers with either grain crops or grassland or what have you. And the common agricultural policy, which is the thing that pays the subsidies that people hear about farmers getting, to get that money you have to have your land in, you know, in a good agricultural condition. So if you let some firs grow in the corner of your field, even though you're probably not going to get much growing there anyway, or if you let some rushes grow in a wet spot or whatever, you can be docked some of your subsidy money. And it's, you know, that's kind of harsh as well, because there are farmers who wouldn't mind letting things go a little bit, maybe just in a few corners or whatever. But then if you dig a pond, for example, and you let some water in from a stream that's running in your farm, and let's say the pond is a few hundred square meters or whatever, you're not going to get the few hundred quid you would have got for that before anymore, because that's just the way the system works. So there are things that can be done system-wide as well, which will make it, I suppose, you know, easier for other people apart from the type of business that I'm in to, you know, to maybe leave a bit more space for nature too. And, you know, on the dairy farm or what have you, it really doesn't maybe matter quite as much if there's a few weeds inside in a grass field as there might be, you know, something competing with the plants that I'm growing or whatever. I'm not sure, maybe the farmers wouldn't agree with that either, but I get the impression from talking to them that, you know, they would like a bit more latitude.
I'll bring you the other way then. If we skip off on, and I think maybe in hindsight now on the conversation, maybe the point I should have prefaced it all with or re-edited this to make it sound like I actually planned to bring the conversation that way, but in fact it was just an inquisitive chat, or I think, as again, old school listeners of the Sod Show will know, it's two guys at a bar, one having never met the other, and it just ends up going, oh my God, I didn't realise you knew such and such, you used to play hurling for Tipperary, and it's recorded and you get to hear it. And I think that's the way we've always tried to do it and keep it that way as well. But if one allows those weeds to grow up or a place to be a little bit unkempt, albeit somewhat maintained within standard, I'll go back to a word that I used of recent that I was criticised for whilst speaking at a gig. And the word I'd used obviously was good husbandry. A good husbandry in fruit trees is one thing. We'll get into that in just a second. But the second one, I think, maybe was, if you're doing all of those basic things or principles of horticulture, that old book again raises its weary head, then assuming you balance the books with the bit of wild growth or the weeds growing underneath or a little bit for the bee and a little bit for the plant, etc., etc., in my horticultural logic head, as simple as I explained this now in as an episode to you who may not be qualified in horticulture, and to you are, I apologise, because you're obviously far more intelligent than I am. But if you follow those basic principles and you do all of that bit, then have I got the balancing bit right, and how well do you do those basic hygiene principles of horticulture thing?
Yeah, well, I suppose, you know, if we went out into the apple orchard, and you could, you know, you can look at the trees, and I suppose the things that we're doing to, you know, to keep those trees healthy and so on, are still very similar to what we were before. So I suppose, for, you know, for someone in the type of crop that we're growing, the weeds are the easiest things to let go. But let's say I still can't really tolerate much in the way of diseases in the trees, because that will affect the you know, the optics, how the apples look, and people won't want to buy them, or I'll actually be forced by legislation to downgrade them or what have you. So from that point of view, I'm still doing an awful lot of what I did horticulturally and intervention wise the same as a long time ago. So again, I suppose it's what you can do, what you can get away with, not so much really, you know, what you would really like to do if, you know, in a non-intervention way. So we still spray the orchards with fungicides to control fungal diseases, for example. And an awful lot of those fungicides are still organic, as in organic chemicals. The kind of chemicals that are made in factories, if you know what I mean. Yeah. And then there's a few things that we can use, like potassium bicarbonate, which you saw being used yesterday in the tunnels on the raspberries, which are, I suppose, very simple kind of molecules that, you know, that some of them have been around for a long time, and some of them people have only recently discovered are useful, you know, to help control diseases in plants and so on. But there's always something new, and hopefully something better coming around the corner. So, you know, people aren't using DDT anymore, which you mentioned earlier on, partially because it was so damaging, but also because alternatives came along that were able to do the same job without the same nasty effects, you know.
They don't like wrestling, Con.
Yeah.
That was a good joke. Yeah, I'm very proud of that. No, what I was referring, on a serious matter, if you go and you prune an apple tree and you throw all of your clippings, prunes, dead and diseased wood on the ground, it is, inverted commas, good for nature, but you can't, because spread of disease from rainwater, droplet, splash. One of the greatest causes of disease I've ever seen in polythene tunnels, in particular on young plants, and you mentioned it, mildews or botrytis or whatever you want to call it, that I've literally seen rip through an entire polythene tunnel in a matter of days. It is colossal on a plant, osteospermum, if you're looking for a name in it. And osteospermum, to me, is indestructible. It's worse than Clematis montana repens. You could set it on fire and it would just punch it in the face. It obviously can't, it's a faux synthetic piece of material. But in the good husbandry thing, there is a point where you leaving bits of wood around the place is, inverted commas, encouraged, but you can't obviously do that. So when you do the bee hotel, the bug hotel, which is a piece of a stump with a few holes drilled into it that we tend to see in a lot of show gardens, you have to put it to a certain area of the grounds. You can't put it in next to the trees, because far off the mark on that one?
No, you're dead right there. Like if we put it in the wrong place, you know, you may get you know, bees beginning to inhabit it and so on. And then if you do happen to have some pest, which is a possibility that you've no alternative for but to spray, of course you're just going to kill the bees that are there. So you have to, you know, think first of all, well, where am I going to put the bees that, if, you know, if the worst comes to worst, I do have to use an insecticide, for example, you know, that I'm not going to be spraying the unfortunate bees that I've made an effort to provide a habitat for in the first place, and those kind of things. So, yeah, it's that's why I keep on saying it's not actually that easy to do, which is partly what makes it interesting and challenging, but also, I suppose, you know, you can argue then it's not a shortcut that you're taking.
I'm of the opinion that if my mum was around, my back garden would probably be a lot tidier, but I seem to get it. I planted a magnolia, I can't remember the variety now or the type of it, of recent, and I'm thinking and trying to talk at the same time. My apologies to you listening at home. And I think I planted a laburnum as well. I've tried that a tree almost every single year, and they've mainly been fruit trees for the last 7 or 8, and I'm only getting into the more ornamental or decorative. Is that even the right word? I'm sorry. I'm going to put this one on pause just for a minute, because my head is itchy. Con's got less hair than me. You can see it in a while. But I'm just going to stick this one on pause. If there's anything you need, at Sodshow on Twitter, facebook.com/thesodshow.com. Con is the apple farmer, Tipperary. It's a long way. You can make all the jokes you want, you in Salt Lake City. And we'll talk to you in a little bit. Thanks so much for listening. He's still sitting beside me. We're just going to walk up the way where there's a draft blowing and there'll be no midges there, and then that'll be fine. All right. Okay. Talk to you in a bit.